Hi, friends, and welcome to number 49 here in our Rays and Initiations webinar commentary. I've got a little bit of light in back of me here, so the image, if it's of any use at all, will look like it has a halo. Anyway, as it gets darker, that should fade out. I just grab any time that I possibly can to continue this discussion, which is basically what it is, of this wonderful book, The Rays and the Initiations. I can't say that it's DK's most advanced book, because in a way, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire is that. But I can say that of the books called A Treatise on the Seven Rays, of which there are five, it is perhaps the most advanced and deals with many abstruse subjects which we have to cultivate the necessary understanding in order to assimilate. And that requires a certain subtlety of mind, subtlety of intuition, the transcendental mind, in order to assimilate, or in any way really absorb what Master DK is trying to say to us. Now, we've been working here on, well, what have we been working on? DK basically telling us about the complete fusion of the three aspects and building the bridge between the triad and the personality, and it's really the soul-infused personality at this point and the degree of the kind of advancement that is needed. In order to do that, you know, I would say the second initiation has to at least be in sight. Now, you know, it's sometimes told to us that there are many lives potentially between the first and second initiation, maybe 30, maybe 20, maybe 15, maybe 7. Sometimes it... it even seems, there's one quote that tells us we can even go on to the second degree one life after the first degree, but in general, Master DK tells us that many lives will pass between these two initiations. So at least the second initiation has to be somewhat in sight, whether one, two, or three lives away. Master DK was training the people in his group for that initiation, most of them anyway, and not all of them were going to be taking that initiation in the present life. Sometimes he told a couple of the people that were going to be taking them. RVB maybe was one who was doing that, and possibly ISGL was supposed to, and maybe is it DLR? Well, anyway, his rays were 1, 5, 5, 6, 7, and it looked like he was in process of taking that initiation. There may have been others, but and probably RSU, maybe she had already taken that degree. Anyway, not all of the disciples were so advanced that they were taking that initiation in that particular life. But I think to, okay, now I'm having trouble. I remember his horoscope better, and he was a man who had quite a bit of difficulty. He was a Taurus. Why can't I pull it all together here? But DK seemed to say that in his next life he might be taking the second initiation, and that the tremendous tests of Scorpio would be his. I could go looking for it, but there were two disciples that had particular problem, LTSK and this man that I'm speaking of, who's, I think it was Libra, rising sun in Taurus, and moon in Leo, something like that. I hope I'm giving you correct information. I think I better check it. We'll do that now. Yes, I have located it. It is a certain Bernard Morrow, LUT, with the Libra rising. He had a lot of difficulties with the opposite sex, I guess. The sun is in Taurus, and the instinctual nature very strong, and the moon in Leo. Interestingly enough, though, it was going to be the Scorpio experiences that he would have in his next life, and he had offered a great sacrifice to Master DK in a previous life, and as the masters often say, they are not ungrateful. So he was being given that kind of opportunity. He did have issues, physical issues and glamour issues, but still it was charted that from Taurus he would move to Scorpio, or at least have plenty of the Scorpio in his chart in the next life to allow him, I think, to take the second initiation. In any case, this Antikorana work can be successfully undertaken when we do have the second initiation at least in sight, not necessarily taking it in that particular life. So, okay, and this science of evocation, we're going on to that, invocation and evocation, it will condition the New World religion more consciously and exoterically than it does now, which now it conditions the approach to that religion esoterically and unconsciously. So we're going to look at an extension of what he has said about invocation and evocation. He tells us we're continuing from some earlier pages where he did describe that. These two words are descriptive of that mysterious something, you know, when we don't have the exact word, we call it a something. Emanation, voiceless appeal, inherent urge towards the light. These are different ways of describing it, which are that something which is innate in all forms, which produces interplay and relationship, and upreaching towards that with which we must interact. Upreaching. Yeah, I guess that's, we're just going to have to leave it at that, and a good old WW, we'll call that with which we must interact. Which is the cause of all progress or pushing forward, you know, along the path of an expanding consciousness and a penetration into the light. This is the return of the spirit. And shall we call it an instinctive return? Anyway, once the spirit has reached a certain degree of immersion, it wills to return to the Father's home and complete that aeonial pilgrimage through the lower five cosmic subplanes on the cosmic physical plane. This is true of a plant pushing its way out of the darkness of the earth into the light of the sun. We've all seen that, how the plants follow the light. A child extricating itself under the life impulse from the womb of the mother, and it seems to be, you know, the child or the soul of the child determines the time of coming forth of a human being pushing himself into greater realms of knowledge. That's what we're trying to do, and effective physical living, because, you know, we are, in our own way, we are all aspirants, and we aspire to recognition and interplay with higher energies. Recognition, how about that, huh? Okay. Of the aspirant driving forward. Now, this is suggesting the will, isn't it? Suggesting the will. Out of the hall of learning into the hall of wisdom, you know, from the second tier of petals in the egoic lotus into the third tier, the sacrifice petals, of the disciple penetrating into the realm of soul light and life, which we all have to do if we're to re-identify as more properly what we are rather than the personality, of the initiate passing from grade to grade in the hierarchy of liberation, and of the Christ moving on into the council chamber of Shambhala, and of the Lord of the world himself undertaking those processes which will lead him into realms of divine life, of which even the highest initiate on our planet has no conception. You know, and will this be on the path of the solar logoi? Okay, let's call it that. Path of the solar, I'm going to put it over here. Path of the path. Why doesn't that work? Okay, I'll try one more time. Let's be patient with me. Okay. Path, it's the capital. It lacks this path of the solar logoi, and that is the sixth path of the solar logoi, or maybe it's our particular solar logos, and as long as we're here, we might as well put in path of the solar logos. It's making us do this, our own particular solar logos, on his way to the cosmic Buddhic plane, just the way we are if we tread the path of earth service, but have to go through a lot of preparation before that, because even though we may fight our way onto the path which the solar logos is treading, we haven't been to Sirius, we haven't been a ray, we haven't been a planet, we haven't been any of those things that prepare us to do what the solar logos is doing, and yet we're on that path, which will eventually offer us a rare opportunity to shine, you might say. Okay, so, and the Lord of the world undertaking those processes which lead him into realms of divine life, of which even the highest initiate has no conception. So will this be the path of the solar logoi? DK does mention this path, but does not say much about it. And since it obviously involves the cosmic Buddhic plane, and he says that he has not yet been to the cosmic astral plane, you know, maybe only a seventh, eighth, ninth degree initiate can do that, then we have to realize that what he's saying is of a general nature. All comes about as part of a great system of invocation and evocation. That's amazing. You know, what we ask for, we get. ASK. Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. All comes about. Actually, you know what I want to do here? I want to kind of go back and put this in yellow. This emanation, this voiceless appeal, et cetera, et cetera. And seeking a response from the higher source towards which it aspires. Such valuable words, you know, it's a treasure, what he's given us. Treasure. All comes as part of a great system of invocation and evocation, of appeal and response, and all are distinctive of the mode of life which governs the entire graded hierarchy of being upon our planet. You know, life, that's the thing. Okay, I wanted to say this, that life reaches unto itself. Once it has reached the lowest point of intended prakritic immersion, or immersion into matter or objectivity. So prakritic, might as well put that in as a word. Objectivity, there we go. All right. This evolutionary pushing forward along the lighted way, out of darkness into light, from the unreal to the real, from death to immortality, and maybe we should add from chaos to beauty and from the individual to the universal, is an inherent urge in all forms. Why? Because all forms are indwelt by pure being or life. And thus the pushing forward. Okay. Oop. Yeah. All right. It constitutes one of the most subtle and one of the least understood laws of the universe. Will we be given a name for this law? The law of return of life to life? The law of living return? What would it be? Being related to the life principle, of which we know as yet not. And somehow, you know, does he identify with us? IDF, with us, or does he include himself in not knowing? It underlies, and yet he says he is an initiate into the curriculum of being, initiate into being. I forget exactly how he says it, but it's not just consciousness. It's initiate into that great aspect that we call the being aspect, the life aspect. It underlies the law of evolution as well as the law of karma, and is in reality the law of the life purpose of the planetary logos and of every other logos, whether, you know, galactic or supergalactic or whatever, cosmic. So he confines it here by saying it's the law of the purpose of the planetary logos, but I might say it is also the law of every other logos as well, from solar to cosmic to what, you know, to the arm of a galaxy, to galactic, to super galactic, and maybe to the universal logos itself. It is an expression of his dynamic intention, and now we're back to the planetary logos. It is an expression of his dynamic intention, and it forces all substance in manifestation and in time and space to act and react in conformity to his will. The pushing forward into greater light, love, love and life forces all into conformity with the divine will of that which is pushing forward. Okay. Right. DW. Excuse me. DW. Well, let's look at that. DW, divine will. Obviously, it'll be useful in the future. I want to put down these abbreviations, which will be useful to any of us. Maybe I'll find a way to give you my abbreviations. I'm going to give you my AAB extracts, the many, many quotes. It must be 7,000 files or more. The many quotes from DK, which I thought have been illuminating. But it's a little complicated from one computer to another, but it can be done. So he thus enables his form, the planet, which is a compound of all the seven kingdoms of nature, you know, and we know what those are, right? The mineral kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, the animal kingdom, the human kingdom, the kingdom of souls, the kingdom of planetary lives, and the kingdom of solar lives, such as maybe Sanat Kumara and the Buddhas of activity, maybe they're included there. So all the seven kingdoms, to express logoic intention for the duration of the great breath, and let's just say this is his breath. Now, something that has to be brought into consideration there, this is the breath of the planetary logos, but does he last throughout the entire solar system? That is a question. Okay, throughout THRT, THRT, throughout. Okay, wish I was a super fast typer, but anyway, it's something. But does he last? Venus may last throughout the entire duration of the solar system, but does our planetary logos? Anyway, the great breath is that which, from the solar logoic point of view, makes the solar system appear and then disappear. However, the great breath has more duration than that because it involves the subtle planes on the way to dense manifestation in the cosmic sense, and then the subtle planes on the return journey back to the extreme subtlety of the universal logos on the highest possible plane of our particular universe. What is the great breath? Well, every great logos has a great breath, and we human beings have a kind of a great breath as we come forth from the soul and have a lifespan and then return. And then the greatest of all breaths is the breath that creates the universe itself. That is really the great breath. And of course, the ongoing breathing of whatever it is, you know, of the absolute, of the one and only beingness, that is the greatest of all breaths, I guess. And each little great breath is an infinitesimal when compared with this process that we call the great breath and forever has been breathing out and retracting in-breathing universes. So anyway, the duration of the great breath. Of this breath, time and space are the two aspects. And you might say that time and space appear with the exhalation of the great, GRB. Let's call that, I love these abbreviations. You know, it gives you a sense, a little bit of mastery of the wonderful names we have here. But usually, usually GB is the, might as well put it in, it's the Great Bear, right? So that'll be GB, and that's the Great Bear. All right. I'm reminding myself of the ones that I've had, the Great Breath. It affects the tiniest atoms and the most exalted being within the sphere of his consciousness and the scope of his livingness. So the planetary logos is the hyparxis, the highest being in his particular hierarchy. Planetary, that's GRB, that won't do. How'd that happen? I'm just trying to make this, get myself a bracket. Okay, the planetary logos is the highest hierarch in his hierarchy of being and becoming. Okay, but of course he's just an aspect of the still greater breath which has breathed him out, probably the solar logos, and that has been breathed out by a cosmic logos and on through the divisions of the galaxy until the galaxy itself has been breathed out by that logos who is the informing life of a family of galaxies, probably seven major and a number of lesser, and on it goes. We don't know how far, but it's we've been through it all forever, you know, but each time with variations and modifications, and even though our solar system lasts another 150 trillion years according to the ageless wisdom, so We have trillions upon trillions, quadrillions probably, of years remaining in the universal great breath. Who is to say how many? I once tried to calculate it, came up with something like, 80 something zeros. Of course, it's just wild calculation. It just was for fun. And where he said a thousand kalpas pass, and yet not 1 hour of cosmic time has elapsed, and so forth. Look on page 1084 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire. And then if you want to venture into a calculation about how long the universe lasts, of course, it's totally hopeless, totally fruitless, but at least it gives you a sense of the vastness. And remember that universal duration is not only about what we see in the realm of matter. Matter can disappear into the ethers, and the ethers can sublimate into still higher types of matter, and on and on and on. And all of that is the universe as well, considered in the larger sense. How long will it all last? Well, we'll be there at the end, just as we were at the beginning, not in the kind of form you recognize yourself as right now, but as the universal logos, which you are, which is an expression or a condensation of the ray of the absolute, which has arisen because of the objectification. Is it intended? The willed objectification of the absolute deity who arose from the absoluteness, about which total blackness we can say nothing except we are it. Okay, so this great breath, it affects the subhuman kingdoms unconsciously to them, that is life becoming conscious of itself in the lower kingdoms gradually, and is in relation to them sometimes spoken of as the law of life of the sun. Interesting. The law of life of the sun. What an interesting kind of name. And is it in relation only to those which are unconscious lives? In relation only to those which are unconscious lives? And, there, of course, that invites. That invites a little work, UNCNS, which should be for us unconscious. Okay. Unconscious. Okay. The law of life of the sun, and you kind of wonder why that wouldn't be also applied to the more conscious lives. The human family, after the stage of personality integration is reached, that's a pretty high stage, I would say, if it's integration with the soul, maybe we're just talking about that first stage of integration, which is just getting the personality together as an effective instrument, reacts with increasing consciousness of the divine purpose. There has to be some. Whoop, I'm always forgetting my brackets. Let's see here. There has. Oh, come on. There has to be some soul infusion. Okay, so I'll just spell it out. Although that's what we want to have one of those. There has to be some soul infusion if there is to be a possibility of reacting even somewhat to divine purpose. Anyway, do we react to divine purpose? Do we react to the plan? To the degree we react to the divine plan, we are beginning to react to divine purpose. The thing about divine purpose is it's all-encompassing, and time is encapsulated at a point when we're dealing with divine purpose, and divine plan is spread out in time and space. It's an objectification of divine purpose. Maybe divine purpose is kind of like a stand all-inclusive standing wave, which includes which is all about the beginning and final relationship, which must eventuate in the world of becoming. Once the Antikarana is constructed and the higher initiations are taken, I guess beyond the third, the initiate then cooperates with that purpose in full understanding and intention. Well, it's not just beyond the third, I guess. This may require the fifth initiation because, let's put it like this. Divine purpose relates to the monadic level. He no longer simply reacts to his own interior urges, which force him ever to invoke the higher aspect of life and of consciousness, which he senses on ahead. This would be self-growth, which is necessary and legitimate. He now knows, he sees, he participates in the plan, which is an aspect of the expression of divine purpose. He relates himself to the divine intention through an understanding of the doctrine or science of tension. I think that's an amazing statement. Do we understand it? But if the tension is sufficient, we might say that he can relate himself to a divine purpose because through tension we can break through into ever new areas of understanding. And divine purpose at least is found in the higher levels of Shambhala, the truly occult subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, which are the second and the first. The lower five are considered more objective. So plan relates to the lower five subplanes of the divine, of the cosmic physical plane, and divine purpose to the higher two. So with sufficient tension, we can destroy a lot of limitations and our various temples and vehicles, our limitations, and enter into a still vaster, a spherical kind of ring pass knot. Anyway, he makes the divine intention his as far as he can grasp it. And divine intention related to divine purpose. And DFL, that would be like a DFL, and we'll say definitely. Some of these words are just ordinary words, but they do, when they are abbreviated, they do facilitate movement through this kind of commentary. This reciprocal interplay produces the mutuality of form, mutability of form, okay, and the immutability of the divine nature, which is distinctive of those liberated consciousnesses which have freed themselves from the prison of form. Mutability and immutability, what's that all about? That's about, B, C, M, G, becoming and being. Immutability of being and the mutability of becoming. So let's make one BCMG, and we'll call that becoming. Or just do it that way. Okay, being and becoming. Becoming and being. So he is related then to divine purpose as it expresses itself through that kind of objectification on the lower five subplanes of the cosmic physical plane, which we call the planes of becoming. They are Atma, Buddhi, Manas, astral and physical, etheric physical subplanes. And the planes of being pretty much are the second and first subplanes, the plane of the monad and the logoic plane, monadic plane and logoic plane. So divine intention and the science of tension is allowing penetration. The science, it's the first time I've seen that phrase or noticed it, tension, allows for penetration into ever higher areas of the divine being, beyond and beyond. We're not just talking about our solar system now, we're talking about the possibility of treading the path of higher evolution and moving ever farther into areas which even our planetary logos, even our solar logos, cannot now really understand. I think if I turn on a light here, it might be just a little bit better. Let's see. Okay, well, this is definitely a lot better. I don't look like the shadow as I'm trying to speak to you. The light behind me is dimming a little bit as the evening is approaching here in the north, and I've turned on the interior lights. Maybe we all have to turn on the interior lights. I'm reminded of a story of the Egyptian mysteries. Is this true? Where you're led into a chamber, maybe you don't know it, of crocodiles. And only if you could generate your own interior light and really see where they were and avoid, could you survive. And if your interior light did not work well, then you were dinner for those accessories to the ancient mysteries. I wonder if we would be so eager to pursue the ancient mysteries if we knew the kind of dangers that were laid out by those in earlier times who took the mysteries very seriously. Okay, so we're into the divine intention, which is an aspect of the divine purpose, and the interplay between the divine intention and divine purpose and our own understanding produces the mutability of form and the immutability of the divine nature. Well, you know, is anything really immutable? I guess that's a question, you know. Even the great breath is mutability itself. But we're talking about the ability relatively to sustain an archetype, regardless of all the many relations that occur here in the world of becoming. And so many of those relations are non-archetypal. And that's our job, is to somehow sense the divine pattern of the divine purpose. Number two, second ray, second plane, monadic purpose. And reconfigure everything here below in the world of becoming so that it reflects that pattern of the divine purpose. I've often thought, you know, that when you look at the first ray, that purpose is the second aspect, and the huge energy we call will is the first aspect, and intention is the third. Some very good thinkers who are my friends reverse these and say that will is the second aspect and purpose is the first, but I've always felt that purpose requires a divine arrangement of perceivables in an archetypal kind of arrangement, and that will is just a huge, huge force of accomplishment. Anyway, that's for discussion. So many of the things that I run into here are for discussion. They cannot be resolved here, but at least if one raises the issue, it can become a topic for our conversation, and who knows, light may be shed upon these very abstruse questions. Elsewhere, where is that? I don't know, maybe we'd have to look elsewhere. Well, I'm not going to go looking. You know, you can find the page and whatever that page is, and probably press the asterisk on page 520, and it will tell you where elsewhere is. Excuse me. Elsewhere, I have said that the definition of religion, which will in the future prove of greater accuracy than any yet formulated by the theologians, might be as possible, might be expressed as follows. Religion is the name given to the invocative appeal of humanity and the evocative response of the greater life to that cry. Now, you know, if you look at that, we can see how the, okay, I'm going to do something crazy here. Just a few, S-A-N-T, S-A-N-T, and I'm going to, you know, try to make that useful, and we'll call that the science of the Antahkarana. Okay, S-A-N-T. So we can see here how the science of the Antahkarana is related to the New World Religion, because this science is the very, let's call it the supreme method, supreme method for human beings to invoke and evoke. So we send up the call and we expect a response. There will be a response. This is based perhaps on our faith, and maybe our faith opens the door. We're often told in the Bible, you know, when healings occur, that your faith has made you whole. And you know how doubt can block the entrance of energy. It's like a closed door. So faith keeps things open, and in times we learn to know with exactitude why we have been trusting in the response of these higher powers. Well, I like this very much. Religion is the name given to the invocative appeal of humanity. We're asking for something, and the evocative response of the greater life to that cry. Now, it may be our soul that responds, and later, when the soul-infused personality, augmented by the triad, is invoking, it may be the monad that responds, and when the monad invokes, it may be the planetary logos that responds, and, you know, on and on, ever higher forms of life evocatively responding to the requests sent up from below. It is, in fact, the recognition by the part of the relationship to the whole, plus the growing demand for increased awareness of that relation. Now, this is, you know, further kind of definition of religion. So, what follows? Well, I'm always doing that. When I make a new word, I'm forgetting my bracket. Okay, well, this is stream of consciousness here, folks. All right, so this, oh, why is that? Why haven't I been able to do that? Okay, it's a C. Okay, so let's just say that what follows here is another definition. Okay, DEF, let's do that. Forgive me. And we're going to call this definition. Definition is another definition of religion. But boy, let's just say that people who conceive of religion in a certain way, and those ways are really outmoded and are outgoing, certainly could use a little stimulation from DK's thought along this line. It would be revolutionary, but, you know, there tends to be a reflexive, protective response to kind of preserve the thought forms that make one feel secure, and thus the truth is rejected. It's, you know, you have to suffer plenty before you're willing to be done with some of the old thought forms you've been clinging to and which have caused you a lot of grief. And then you begin to know surely there must be something better. And slowly but surely, one begins to accept new possibilities. And even that's even true for us when we're accepting what apparently is the ageless wisdom here. There will come time when it too provides a limitation and on. There comes a time eventually when the whole universe, the whole universal logos, is a limitation compared with absolute infinitude. So we're in quite an amazing system, and we are that system. And when I say system, I mean the entire universe and that which lies behind it. which is, the absolute to which nothing can be added or taken away. So it is, this religion is in fact the recognition by the part of its relationship to the whole, plus a constantly growing demand for increased awareness of this relation. And obviously, OBVL, obviously this is why we study the ageless wisdom, because we want increased awareness of the relationship to the whole. We are, tiny little units of self-circumscribed life who have ventured into the land of distances, really. And we want to return and to understand our relationship to all the other emanations which have journeyed into the land of distances. Some people, though, kind of like to stay there, like the members of the Black Lodge or the Counterforce. They've journeyed far into the land of distances, and that's where they want to remain. But the normal person, the normal individual, once reaching the stage of humanity, wants to return to wholeness, even with all the sacrifices of the relationship to form, which that entails. Okay, so we forgot that definition, and it draws forth a recognition of the whole that the demand has been made. Recognition of the whole. Well, what's the whole for us? Sometimes the soul is the whole, or the monad is the whole. The greater life recognizes the demand. We always have to count on that, you know. We're not just hopeless little human beings appealing to a God that isn't there, or a greater life that doesn't really exist. In fact, we are appealing to far greater realities, and if we can have the humility to have faith, the answer will come sooner rather than later. It is the impact of the vibration of humanity oriented specifically to the great life, which it feels, of which it feels itself a part, and, that would be either the planetary logos or later the solar logos. At first, then on to other logoi, but that's way ahead of us. Upon that life, the responsive impact of that all-surrounding love, and the responsive impact of that all-surrounding love upon the lesser vibration. So the our particular planetary logos has a second-ray soul. The second-ray soul, I think that's a that's a good one. Maybe I've never had that one before. SRSL. We'll call it second ray soul. Of both the planetary logos and the solar logos respond. Of both the planetary logos and the solar logos respond. It is only now that the impact of the human vibration can be dimly sensed in Shambhala. I've showed you that picture of the three triangles or the three periods of understanding. Well, the three periods of energy interaction, and just now Shambhala is beginning to respond to humanity. Hierarchy has responded, and Shambhala, through its impacts, is responding to the invocation sent up by humanity. Hitherto, its most potent activity has only reached the hierarchy. I wonder if I could, find that. It's one of those things that is just so, it's just, D drive from large computer, AAB, diagrams, and, let's see. If I put down the word triangles, let's see, three triangles, major triangles, four triangles, three triangles. There it is. Okay, there you go. Well, this is an important one, and that's why those AAB extracts can be so very important to you as you do your research. But in the present, you see how Shambhala is, Shambhala reached in the past towards, humanity reached towards Shambhala, but it's not much of a reach. And now Shambhala is really responding, and in the future there will be reciprocity all the way around. Interestingly, it's kind of hierarchy at the moment, which is responding to Shambhala, you know, initiates of the third, fourth, and fifth degree, responding to, I'm invoking initiates of the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth degree. We can't even put the initiatory status of Sanat Kumara in our ordinary maps, because after all, he is the, in a way, he is the expression of the planetary logos, and many Mahakalpas have passed since the planetary logos was even at the stage of what the master is now. I guess it all depends on what we consider a Mahakalpa to be. A lot of those terms seem to have more than one meaning, some of them shorter, some of them longer, and that's how DK manages to blind that whole situation, so we're not too certain, but usually a Mahakalpa is a duration of an entire solar system, so many, many Mahakalpas ago, the planetary logos was at the state of the initiate of the fifth degree. Anyway, there's a big response now with the Shambhala impacts, and before you know it, we're going to have the necessary reciprocity with Shambhala. The Waisak festivals begin to give us this, and the future festivals where the new group of world servers under Taurus sort of takes the place of the Buddha and applies to Shambhala, which is responding to Taurus. This will signal the beginning of this kind of reciprocity. We're not there yet. It's pretty much a one-way street, although, you know, some of those disciples who are coming closer to the hierarchy can make the appeal. Anyway, remember this particular diagram or find a way to find it. Do I know where it is? Well, it's somewhere. And I can't tell you even what book it's in, but I did excise it. And of course, in the future, everything is a two-way street. Humanity and hierarchy, humanity and Shambhala, hierarchy and Shambhala. It's a totally reciprocal interplay in the future triangle. So where are we now? Yeah, we're here. So it is only now that the impact of the human vibration can dimly be sensed in Shambhala. Hitherto, the most potent activity has reached only the hierarchy. Religion, the science of invocation and evocation, as far as humanity is concerned, is the approach in the coming new age of a mentally polarized humanity. This is going to be facilitated by the mental nature of Aquarius, AQ. All right. Sorry, I got to do that. Please bear with me. It may serve you in the future. Okay. Oops. Aquarius. Aquarius. The mental nature of Aquarius with expressing particularly its fifth ray energy. The seventh ray that accompanies this age of Aquarius comes from a different source. It's not part of the constellation Aquarius per se, but since Aquarius is ruled by Uranus in its highest hierarchical form, the seventh ray will naturally be involved with it. In the past, religion has had an entirely emotional appeal. That was kind of how far humanity could activate its energy system. The mind was a bit quiescent, still is for so many. It concerned the relation of the individual to the world of reality, of the seeking aspirant for the sought-for divinity. And basically, you know, this is the seeking out of the soul energy, but often called God. You know, when the soul responds, people imagine that Almighty God of the universe is responding, but let's keep a certain sense of proportion here, or the Almighty God of the universe is not going to be responding when we even have trouble with our particular little human vibration of making an impact in Shambhala, where the Lord of the world is found, a great being to us, but minuscule when compared with the huge beings of the universe. Its technique was the process of fitting oneself for the revelation of divinity. That would be purification, and of achieving a perfection which would warrant that revelation, because those who are pure in heart will see God. Those who are, okay. of developing a sensitivity and a loving response to the ideal man. Devotion and worship entered, summarized for present-day humanity in the Christ. Later it will be someone else, Master Kudumi is coming along in the age of Capricorn, and there will always be a new Bodhisattva and always be a new Christ. But the Lord Maitreya is quite stupendous in his care, inasmuch as he has taken on a 5,000-year Bodhisattva-ship instead of just the usual 2,500. So he saw the trouble that lay ahead for humanity, I suppose, if he didn't do that. And then at the sixth initiation period, when he was able to realize the divine will of the monad in Sanakumara, he consented, I think, in the Garden of Gethsemane to go ahead with an additional 2,500 years. And that was only after he had spent 500 years in his bodhisattva-ship. So now he's been the bodhisattva for roughly 2,500 years, and another 2,500 years lie ahead. Well, friends, such interesting material. Christ came to end the cycle of this emotional approach, and which had existed since Atlantean days, and emotional civilization. Its numbers are 4 and 6. He demonstrated in himself the visioned perfection. He became, the ideal man, and then presented to humanity an example in full manifestation of every possibility in man up to that time. Always remember, not every possibility can be demonstrated in any one time, as there are many greater possibilities which lie ahead. A greater thing shall you do, he said, than I am doing. And the achieving of the perfection of the Christ consciousness became the emphasized goal of humanity. We hardly appreciate, even now, we hardly appreciate what this Christ consciousness really is. We have some idea about the Master Jesus, perhaps, but it was the Christ in the body of Jesus who was demonstrating certain things for us, and even his disciples could not possibly receive all that he might have given. So he was demonstrating what could be demonstrated up to that time. Now, when he comes again in the age of Aquarius, the demonstration will be far greater. Okay, friends, here's what I'm going to do. I was told by the lady who was so kindly transcribing all of this, what a task, that it's easier when I do these things in one-hour chunks. So, sometimes I would go on for 5 hours, and that must be a very daunting thing to transcribe such a thing, such a big program. So I'm going to say this is the end of Rays and Initiation webinar commentary number 49, and it's pages, how do I know? There's always that hunt, and I should have that worked out faster. Well, let's just go a little beyond it and see what page might appear. So it's up to page 521, and I forget where we started. Was it 516 or something like that? Let's just see. Yep, 519 to 521. Oh, maybe I'm not covering ground as rapidly as I thought. Maybe I just talk too much. Okay, so and we'll say that this is pages 519 to 521. Amazing stuff, though, really. And beginning of Raise an Initiation Webinar Commentary, number 50, pages 521 to, let's see how far we get. And we will continue this, trying to fathom this extraordinary book. Well, we can't fathom it. You know, when DK said, look, I've given you this material for about a generation, and we think about a human generation that's 25 years. How in the world could anybody fathom all this in 25 years? So maybe he was talking more about a spiritual generation that could last longer. I can just, the secret doctrine cannot be fathomed, and that was given 150 years ago almost. Huh. And so much of what DK has given here cannot be rapidly assimilated, but we have to do our job in assimilating it before it becomes possible for him to give more, which he's scheduled to do starting from 2025 and onwards. So we have a lot of work to do in assimilation, and that's one of the work, that's one of the tasks that I'm trying to undertake, is to help make it a little easier for all of us to really think clearly about these things and assimilate what he has given. We can't do it all. No, we can't, but it's just so tremendous. And if we assimilate sufficiently, it will rightly invoke his response, his evocation, which will be the giving out of the third installment. I don't know, would it be delayed? But anyway, the year 2025 is mentioned and beyond. So I'm sure the next 8 years or so will be fateful, a fateful clearing, just the way World War I was a fateful clearing before he contacted Alice Bailey in 1919 and began the 30 years of work. All right, that's it. And we will work on to number 50. Oh, I better put that in. Okay, that should be a number, not a... There we go. All right. Okay, friends, we'll see you soon. We keep going. Bye-bye.